Hello and welcome to Prince George Sexual Assault Center Voices. This is a podcast where we want to break down barriers, address stigmas, and talk about all things related to sexual and gender-based violence.
We are recording today on the traditional unceded territory of the Kla'itlé Tene people, where we are uninvited guests who live, work, and play here.
Before we get started, we want to advise our listeners that we will be discussing sensitive subject matter, and this may be triggering for some. Please take care of yourself and remember to reach out to a mental health service provider should you require it.
My name is Kendra.
And I'm Linnell.
And we are the executive and assistant directors of the Prince George Sexual Assault Center. We are starting a series of interviews with our staff and professionals from the anti-violence sector. It's our hope that listeners will find support, encouragement, and learning from the content that we record. So Linnell, it's 2024. We're back in the studio recording podcasts again. And it's the new year. It's an exciting time. We've got lots of things to talk about in this first episode of the year. But first, I'm bringing back our icebreaker question, which I know you love.
I do love them.
So before we get started today, the question I have for you is, what is a question that you wish people would ask you?
That's a good question. I'm a bit of an introvert, which I think surprises some people because I was raised to be an extrovert, but I'm not. So I don't like small talk. So any question that is, I think, meaningful and thoughtful and really gets to sort of the core of who I am, because those are the kinds of questions I ask people. I want to know real things, not the fluff. So, yeah.
So you want someone to actually ask you the questions that bring out the essence of who you are versus, what's your favorite color?
Exactly.
How many children do you have? Cool. And I think for me, the question I wish folks would ask me is anything surrounding origin, like where I come from, what was family like, and how that has framed the person who I have become.
That must be why you and I connected, because those are the exact questions I ask people.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those conversations about why we are who we are and how we make our space in the world. And I think anything that we can talk about that gives people that greater perspective on how we move through the day-to-day and the whys behind it.
Exactly, Kendra. I mean, we all come with a story.
Exactly. Well, what a great start to the new year. New year, new podcast, 2024. So just so our audience knows, and welcome to anyone who is new to our podcast audience. Welcome back to folks who've been listening to us all of last year. We're so happy that we could keep this going and that we have the time to keep this going. And yeah, we want to talk to folks today just kind of about a recap of our 2023 and let people know what we did this past year. It was crazy busy. Lots of really cool stuff happened, and we just want to share with you all what the year was like and kind of take you into the future, because we've got a lot of really exciting things happening coming up.
Yeah, it was certainly a productive, busy year, 2023 was, and I've been able to witness, just because I've been at the center a while, I've been able to witness a tremendous growth last year in terms of staffing and programming, and it was a really exciting year and more exciting things to come in 2024.
So let's take ourselves back to the beginning of 2023. And if I'm remembering right, we kind of started the year on a bit of a high point, like a bit of a crush. Because I think, if I remember correctly, we started off the year and there were a ton of grants. I remember that most about January.
Yeah, no, you're right, Kendra. There was, I think, sort of that tail end coming out of COVID, there was, and not only were there increased grants, but there was some really creative grants, and they weren't so structured, and it was more the ability for agencies to apply for funding that was actually needed rather than sort of what government or corporations wanted to see. There was, I think we had more say and more voice and the ability to be a bit more creative.
Yeah. Can you tell maybe our audience a bit more of what that kind of looks like for us between these more structured grants and the more creative grants, and why it's important for us to like be as busy as we were writing last New Year, and what just kind of the gist of that, kind of explain that to the folks that we are listening to us.
So I think, you know, I think most people may not know that a lot of time is spent at nonprofits writing funding proposals, and it's fairly labor intensive and takes a particular skill set. I find it challenging. I've spent my entire adult career doing anti-violence work. It, for me, is frustrating because it's like health funding or criminal justice funding. It should just exist. We know the issues. We know there's statistics to back it all up. We know what needs to be done. And of course, there needs to be financial accountability. So I'm not talking about, you know, financial reporting. That is necessary. But nobody wants to pay to keep the doors open and the lights on. And so that's always challenging for, I can speak specifically to the anti-violence field, is funding that is not project-based. Because it previously, and there, it still exists to some degree, you always had to create a project doing the work that we, in our case, we've done for 40 years. So continually trying to write project applications to receive funding when we really just need the work that we do, the very important work that we and anti-violence organizations across the country do, it needs to just be funded. And I want to give a shout out. I mean, I know the Canadian Women's Foundation and the Vancouver Foundation, sort of in my opinion, really spearheaded some shifting in how some of that funding works and applying for it. So it's exciting.
Yeah, that's great. I love the synopsis you gave on that piece of our work. And because that ends up for the senior members of the society, that ends up being a bulk of our work, is looking mm-hmm. at funding and then reporting on the funding and doing all of those pieces. And then constantly having to get creative when we're requested to do these projects or grants that are project-based. And that's always such... can be such of a challenge. And I think you and I talked about it quite a bit in the new year last year, was how typically our funding cycle is in the fall, so that funding comes through for the new fiscal. So that typically starts April 1st of whatever new year. And last year we definitely saw that shift. I don't know if it was because of post-COVID or what happened, but it seemed that the funding cycle kind of just kept going, started in the fall, and it just kept rolling through to the new year.
And I agree, Kendra. I think government and organizations and foundations, we really were challenged at the beginning of COVID, because nonprofits, and again, particularly anti-violence organizations, we've always been so busy with our heads to the ground, just doing the work, doing the frontline work. And so things like technology is just, it's never been funded and it's never been our focus. So we were really challenged at the beginning of COVID about, oh goodness, how do we switch to providing more creative programming in terms of doing things online or just being more creative? And I'm just so thankful that I think the world has recognized we can do things differently. We don't need to do things the way they've always been done. And it really created this opportunity, I think, that's pretty amazing for us to stretch and grow and do things differently.
Exactly. So that was kind of how we kicked off a year from today, and we're still in that funding, you know, hustle, I think we can say with lots of honesty and frankness. But So last year, if I'm remembering, we kind of moved into the early spring, and we were successful in a pretty big grant that we got, and that was to start our sexual assault response team, and that was a Government of BC initiative where a number of sexual assault centers or people, societies doing sexual assault response work were able to get this formalized funding that wasn't project-based, and we were successful in our application, which was awesome. And so can you tell me a bit about, like, from your perspective as the ED and someone who's been in the field as long as you have, what was that like to see, A, that funding come out, and then, B, successfully get that funding?
I mean, I recently did a radio interview, and I think it's life-changing, and it's a critical moment in history. We have seen a shift where sexual violence work is being recognized as important and critical, and it absolutely needs to be coordinated, collaborated, and funded properly in order to do this work. The other exciting piece, after 40 years, we see a real focus on ensuring that the work is Indigenous-focused, which I think has needed to happen for a really, really long time. So we, like Kendra said, we were the recipients for that sexual assault funding to basically fund the work that we've sort of always done. We're a sexual assault center, and there's really not been that dedicated funding. So it's always been that challenge of trying to provide that service 24/7 with skilled employees who have the skills and the education and the knowledge, and we can retain them. That's challenging to do without funding, and that's been the big shift for us, is that work is funded now. Of course, funding always needs to increase. The need is great, and when we look at, you know, even just Stats Can, and we look at the impact of sexual violence and gender-based violence in our communities, the numbers are alarming, and the funding does need to be there and does need to increase, but we're off to a good start.
Mm-hmm. It must be so exciting after so many years in the field to see these really pivotal shifts in the way that, you know, business is being done, I think it's safe to say. And that was one of the highlights of the new year and early spring last year. I know some other things that we did last year or were able to participate in, I know you were quite busy with your role at the Ending Violence Association of BC, or EVA BC, sitting on their board, and did a lot of traveling for those folks. You and I did a lot of traveling to Vancouver for educational purposes and also for networking purposes. What can you tell me, or what do you remember about some of those early trips last year?
I'm glad you brought that up, Kendra, because one of the things I've always praised Prince George and Northern communities in general about is that we work collaboratively. And my experiences of providing training in larger centers has been that that's not always true for larger centers. I think it's a little easier to become siloed in the work you do when there's more access to services in larger centers. And in Prince George and in Northern British Columbia, the nature of the size of our communities, the remoteness for the outlying communities, that folks access Prince George as sort of the service hub, we've always had to work collaboratively with community partners, not just in Prince George, but throughout the North. One of the shifts I've seen with this increase in funding and the change in some of the funding structures is I'm seeing that in large centers now. So we really are collaborating with organizations and agencies across the entire province, which is critical that we're not reinventing the wheel, that we are working together and we are having conversations about what works and what doesn't, and the differences between northern versus southern, rural versus urban. So I've seen again, a really exciting shift in the way the work is being done and the way the anti-violence field is working together.
Yeah, it is. It's such a beautiful and brilliant shift, and seeing that propensity for the current or existing expertise. And I think, too, along with that, we've seen starting to see a bit of a shift back towards hiring folks with that lived experience versus that academic, solely academic experience, which I think has been really cool. That's another big part of what happened last year as well, is like we increased our staff exponentially. We Yes. have grown, people.
Yeah, we've really grown. We're almost running out of space.
Which is tough.
A little concerning, but we're making it work. You know, as I think many of our viewers, our listeners may know, we moved a couple of years back, and we thought, oh, this will be great for, you know, years to come, and we're kind of bursting at the seams right now, which is a good thing in terms of there's the staff on hand to provide services 24/7 and a number of different programming options that have opened up for us, and being able to be, again, creative and offering specialized services to the LGBTQIA plus community or sort of for marginalized folks. So it's been exciting in being able to really stretch and grow and reach the folks who need the services the most.
Exactly. And been able to meet some really cool people last year, both within the hiring that we've done and the interview processes that we've done with folks, but also through the podcast, but also through the folks that we ended up hiring to work for us. So we went from, I think, a staff of eight, I think, kind of at the end of 2022. And when we ended in December, kind of our unofficial ending of the year, we have 12 people. So we've grown significantly when you look at a smaller nonprofit. Having even that four-person growth is huge.
Well, and in a few weeks, we'll be at 14. So it's really wonderful to just, there's such an eclectic group of folks working at the center who come from all walks of life and experience and educational backgrounds. It's really exciting to be able to connect with folks with their own area of expertise.
Exactly. I think that's one of the big shifts too we saw last year, and something that we've talked a ton about with our senior managers, is the shift to really look at the radical change of putting people where they will thrive
Yes.
in their position, with still, you know, the expectation to grow themselves and the challenges that come from just a day-to-day work, but also just being able to take a person's passion and be able to translate that directly into the work that they're doing. And it's come out like pretty cool. And I know that whole aspect from the HR community of, you get people to do what they're passionate about, and then they'll work harder or better or whatever we can say about that. But to actually see it play out in real time has been really, really neat. And so to go with that, some of the programming or some of the opportunities that we had last year was our Upstanders program. We were able to get into a couple of the different high schools in town, which is our education program working with the older youth. We also had our Empowerers program last year, which is a similar program to Upstanders, but for the little guys. We also were involved in some partnerships with the Northern Queer Connections and their growth. We've also, last year, we participated in the Take Back the Night for the first time in quite a while. I mean, between COVID and just shifts in the organization, that was something that we brought back as well. Like just from a programming and integration in the community context, we were really busy.
We were. Yeah, we were busy, and just always focusing on how can we best reach the folks that need our services the most, really focusing and sort of looking at through that lens about working with our most marginalized community members, and how can we do that better?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we have really focused on and I think refined, if I can say that, in the last couple years, especially last year, really with the increase in projects, the increase in funding, the diversity of staff, the integration of different ideas and different backgrounds of folks that were coming in. I think we were pretty successful in being able to connect with folks. Some of the other stuff too that we did last year, when we talk about the travel piece, we were able to take part in a couple of cool opportunities in the fall. We were part of the menstrual symposium down at Douglas College. We were invited to speak at that. We were invited to take part in a couple of different restorative justice circles last year, so working with the RCMP and working on those diversion options for folks that are impacted by intimate partner violence or gender-based violence when it is appropriate. We were able to take part in the Living in Community conference, which brought together folks from the sex worker community and sex worker support community, which was really, really interesting because a couple of these conferences that we went to were the first time that they existed and have come back since COVID. So it was a really neat year to see some of our old friends.
It was.
And so along with that as well, we were able to participate in the Ending Violence Association's annual training forum. We were able to, I know Linnell took a part in that with her role of working with Eva in her capacity as board co-chair. Yeah, and just some really exciting things. So with that, what are some of the things that we can tell the people about that are coming up this year?
Well, this year is even more exciting. We found out in sort of late fall, early winter, that our application was successful for a sexual assault clinic, or sexual assault center is what they're calling them. We call it the clinic. But so five organizations around the province were successful in their funding applications to open up sexual assault clinics. And so that will provide survivors with a sort of a full spectrum of wraparound support services, from the work that we've historically always done to the RCMP interview room for folks who do choose to involve the criminal justice system. And the really exciting piece is the clinic. So a medical clinic to gather forensic evidence for those folks that are interested in that avenue, or just to get medical care post-assault. So we are very busy sort of getting that up and running. It's just such an exciting, I've done this work for 40 years, and this was always on my wish list. I didn't think I would see it. So it's just so celebratory. It makes such a difference for survivors. As a survivor myself, I know what I would have needed. And it was this supportive, trauma-informed, wraparound support services. So from counseling to support, advocacy, accompaniment to court if folks choose that, until the clinic is up and running, accompaniment to hospital, but then it is going to happen. We will have the clinic in our space so that our counselors are on hand to not only support the survivor, but their family member or children in a really trauma-informed, supportive way.
Yeah, it's so exciting. That's part of the reason why we're running out of space, because we've dedicated a portion of our agency building particularly just for the clinic. And it's great with the building that we're in now is that we're centrally located downtown Prince George, and that we're able to support people 24/7, which is also a bit of a change that we had in the last year. So one of the initiatives that we started off that is just ramping up now as we head into 2024 is our volunteer program, along with our 24-hour sexual assault support line. So that sexual assault response team, the first of the two government grants that we were successful in, that gave us the opportunity to really take a look at our ability to respond on that 24/7 basis. And so we have a phone line that we use now. We have our on-call schedule, which is all new. And just the technology that goes along with that was a new thing, as well as having the staff to support that programming. So we've got our volunteer program that we're just putting the final touches on and have started advertising for the first volunteer class. We have our 24-hour line, like I said, so that's accessible to anyone who's been impacted by sexual assault and needs support in kind of that first 72 hours of an assault. We've got our on-call schedule, so we're able to really robustly meet people at the hospital or meet them at the center and figure out what the next steps are until the clinics open. There's just lots of moving parts that are ready to launch.
And that's just such a huge shift, Kendra. Historically, the center's always provided 24/7 support services, but we were really leading heavily on the senior management to respond to those calls after hours, which just becomes challenging when you're working a full day and then also going out to calls in the middle of the night. And so this allows us to actually build that support out so it's consistent and you're not burning out your staff and people can become experts in that response work.
It is very exciting, especially since we were able to hire quite a few young people last year. I think that's another big shift. So it's been an interesting dynamic change in that we have such a broad spectrum of just different ages. And with that, I think in the last year especially, we've seen that different creativity come
absolutely
through.
Yeah. So our staff range from 19 to 60, which is new. I mean, I've been around the center for a long, long time. And I mean, historically, the age group was, you know, the folks were in similar age brackets. And so we really have a dynamic, diverse group of quite young staff who are very keen and just bring such a renewed energy and approach to this justice work we're doing.
And also they bring Sticker Club.
They do have Sticker Club. Yeah, it's quite exciting. It makes me chuckle all the time.
Yeah, it is. It's been pretty cool to watch and pretty cool to see just the growth too in some of our younger staff members as well. It's been a really, really exciting 2023. And as we move into 2024 with the clinic starting, with the volunteer program first class getting up and out in the community, with the continued sexual assault response, but on a more supported basis, with the couple different travel opportunities that we've had come down, and then a couple ones in the future. I know we're going at the end of this month, we're going to go see our friends at the Victoria Sexual Assault Center to see how they do things. And we're taking a float plane for the first time.
Yeah. Oh. And again, I just want to stress how important it is to, I think we've always done that here in the North, is that community collaboration. But now it's expanded into these larger centers. And the Victoria Sexual Assault Center has run their clinic since, I believe, 2016. So there, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We need to view their clinic, see how things work there, and then adapt things for the North. Because there is some differences between support services in the North and the South. But it really is that collaborative effort across the province.
Yeah. And that's also really, really fun and really cool to be able to see that move forward and launch and deliver. Also, we've been supported this past year and continue to be supported by a few key people or organizations in the community. So to give a bit of a shout out to our friends at U-Ride, which we partnered with this year to support us in transporting some of the folks that we work with, which has been really great. They're a small company. They are the Uber of the middle-sized communities is how it was best described for us. So that's been a really neat partnership to see supporting us. We've also been able to work with, like I said, the Northern Queer Connections. We've also been supported by our board of directors, which is great. Those volunteers are pivotal to the work that we
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
And the membership. We also, I think it's important for us to add that by the time this comes out, we'll have had our annual AGM, which is a big piece of how we run the agency. It's just some really, really exciting stuff. The one thing that we haven't mentioned yet, or two things that we haven't mentioned yet, is we've got two really big anniversaries coming up this year. One, our fearless leader, who's sitting right across from me, is turning 60. So we get to celebrate Linnell this year. And the other is that the center's incorporation is turning 40. So we're planning a 40th anniversary coming up in the summer, which happens to kind of coincide with Linnell's 60th rotation around the sun. So some pretty big things to look forward to this year, and branching out and supporting and opening and changing and growing and stretching. And it's been just phenomenal to see what's going on and what's going to happen.
And we really want to invite our listeners to contact us if they have ideas about how do we celebrate the anniversary of the Prince George Sexual Assault Center's 40 years. I know that there's listeners out there who worked in the past at the center or were volunteers or were provided services to. So if anyone wants to participate in the organization and some fun ideas about how can we make this a community event.
And to do with that, how do we honor staff from the past at this pivotal anniversary and really exciting celebration? I know we've got some pretty keen folks on staff that are looking to make it pretty wonderful and pretty magical. So with that, that's our catch up and our look forward to for 2023 and into 2024. So I want to just say thank you to those who've stuck around. Welcome to those people who maybe have just found us. We are going to be launching the podcast on Spotify this year, so we'll have all our back episodes there and all our current releases will be there. We'll also have a link from our website, so tidying up those technological pieces as well. So have no fear. We are still around. We're still recording. We've got starting the year off with a really cool interview with our friends from up at UNBC Women's Center. And yeah, we're just really excited to see what 2024 is going to bring.
Good night, everyone.